interviewing the leading private equity executives and unlocking the secrets of success. Welcome to the Private Equity Podcast with Alex Rawlings.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Private Equity Podcast. Joining us today is Alex Lee, Senior Investment Executive at the Development Bank of Wales. Alexander is an experienced technology, venture capital, and private equity investor. Welcome, and thank you very much for sharing your insights today.
Thanks very much for having me.
So, Alex, as we normally start on the process, give me a 60 to 90 second breakdown of you, please.
I'd love to. Thank you. So born and bred in South Africa, came over here about 6 years ago to the UK, started life actually in engineering, realized I wasn't quite a typical engineer. So did what most of them do and go into business school, learn more about business and finance. Always had a lot of entrepreneurial ideas and small businesses that I ran. So a small e-commerce business, a bit of software development and various other, you know, mentoring things. I always had my finger on the pulse in terms of startups. I came out of business school realizing, there's this thing called private equity, and that combines your business skills, your technical skills, financial skills, and of course, love for people, which is something that's, you know, really I'm passionate about, working with people and helping them. And that's, you know, led me on an interesting journey from buyouts to operational transformation, actually working in a FTSE 250, really, you know, so I've worked in pre-revenue startups right up to, you know, 700 million turnover, big corporate machine, and learning how startups sell into organizations like that. And all of that experience has all culminated in my current role in VC, where I'm able to deploy those skills, make investments, advise companies, work on exits, and create value.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for that. So, Alex, what's one mistake do you see private equity firms or their portfolio companies making, and what actions would you take to correct them, please?
Yeah, great. I'll stick on the portfolio side, because I think that will be of most value to the entrepreneurs out there. So I think it's probably three things in one. So selecting the right funder. A lot of people try and optimize valuation when that, you know, actually it's about getting the cash into the business, choosing the right funder, and then valuation third. So it's picking the right partners that are going to help you scale up and deliver on what you've promised and help you on this difficult journey, whether that's, you know, with just general support, whether it's with advice, connections. So that is paramount to your success. Then, of course, listening to the experts you have around the table. You know, it's very flattering when you go through an investment process. There'll be a huge degree of due diligence, either by the investors, external consultants. And so everyone is looking at your business, trying to add value, and they want it to succeed, especially if they decide to proceed with the investment. Then they want to use those insights to fortify your business, to help you on this common goal you have. So it's about listening to them. And I think that the third one in that same vein is also, you know, just be careful of not overpromising. Make sure that whatever you state is truly conservative, because often you hear the word conservative thrown around a lot, and all you're doing is setting false expectations for your investor. And ultimately, when you don't deliver on it because it's not humanly possible, then you're misaligned and then you struggle to raise follow-on capital. If you're in a VC setting and in a PE setting, you don't hit those metrics and get your sweet equity or your bonuses or that exit you were targeting. So just, you know, work in conjunction with investors, you know, do the things that you do well, and, you know, listen to people who have been through this process before. They want to help you, let them help you.
Absolutely. So we've seen more and more technology companies receiving private equity investments. So what's your take being in that space on the kind of technology industry and how that fits within the private equity setting?
Yeah, no, it's a very pertinent question, and it's something we've seen the rise of, you know, particularly over the past 5 years. And I think it's, you know, in summary, it's a necessity. And having, you know, worked in private equity and looking at the problems you have there, And then now being fully immersed in the VC side, we do have, you know, a PE division, or does PE deals, should I say. What you're seeing in private equity is the old, you know, mechanisms aren't working as effectively. So financial gearing is not working. Cost bases are already stripped down as low as they can be. And there's a lot of upward pressure on costs. So controlling them is not like it used to be. So what are we seeing? Well, companies need to grow the top line. They need to differentiate through technology. They need to get those operational efficiencies. And the only way to do that is with technology. Now, so you've got PE companies, and often, you know, going back even 3-4 years ago, they would buy out VC-backed businesses just for the tech team, you know, in terms of they're able to work together. They can come into an old school PE-backed business and supercharge it and get that tech working, or they might buy the technology. So you're seeing investment in both ends of the spectrum. That's obviously providing, you know, VC-backed companies with a lot of liquidity. And in the same breath, you're getting a lot of new investors coming into that space because they're realizing that they can generate a lot of value by coming in early, supporting those companies, getting their monthly recurring revenue up, getting those SaaS models going, because it is so lucrative to do so. So it's a really good synergy of demand and supply.
Interesting. So with you doing or having done both private equity and venture capital deals, which isn't particularly common. Usually somebody chooses one and obviously two different, very different paths under the same banner in essence. Mm. So which one do you prefer, Alex, and why do you prefer it?
Yeah, good question. I think I like elements of both. I think, you know, in terms of the pros of the private equity side, it's obviously bigger. The returns can be bigger. Stakes are bigger. So it's really cerebral and, you know, it's particularly around the level of financial analysis and market analysis you can do. You know, you can really go to the nth degree, and you've got a lot of historical information that you can mine and model. So it's less of not guessing game, but there's, you know, more predictable outcomes. So, you know, generally returns are expected to be lower as a result, but not always. Sometimes you can generate some incredible returns, you know, between, you know, up to 8x with the leverage, so that the, you know, the financials are very attractive. The only thing that, in terms of if anyone's deciding between the two careers, what you find with PE is it's a lot about analyzing the past. And, you know, yes, you look forward and you look forward to 5 years over your investment horizon, and then another 5 years for the person who's going to buy you. And because you need to make sure you're leaving value on the table, because that's going to uplift your exit multiple. But the big distinction I make between venture is that it's mostly forward looking. So, in PE, you might say, all right, give me your last 10 years financials. In VC, you ask, have you got a financial model? Can I see your last 2 years stat accounts? And that's it. So it's a lot more about the investor's knowledge of the market space, new trends, belief in the entrepreneur, their past experiences and their CV. That's what you're analyzing, as opposed to, you know, the actual business itself. So you become more of an expert in business models and trends. And it's, you know, obviously exceptionally high risk. And, you know, that's why you are looking for the tens and 100Xs, because you are going to have, failures. Either you're going to call it wrong, or the company is just going to fall over, or the competition is going to receive, you know, hundreds of millions of funding and just blow you out the water. So it very much, you know, a lot of people say the difference between seed investments and Series A is a lifestyle choice. And I think in private equity and VC, it's also a bit of it's more kind of propensity for risk. You know, are you the person who likes gambling and cryptos, or could you think of nothing worse? So it's more around your value system and what you really enjoy. You know, the skill sets are there is a lot of overlap. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Do you find interesting point there? In particular, do you find that you mentioned about that really immersing yourself in your industry? If you look at the private equity space, we tend to see that a lot of them are specialist within, let's for example, healthcare, and we're seeing more and more of that. But a lot of the firms are generalist in nature, but will have a particular bias, usually against what I regard as core country industries, manufacturing, consumer, you know, healthcare services, business services. Do you think that because of the way that VC operates, and especially what you've mentioned there, that you really, as a VC investor, you have to be a particular specialist within a particular niche rather than taking a general type approach within VC?
Yeah, it's a good question. And some people might say, look, you don't have to be a specialist in terms of, you know, the DD, because you can outsource that. All you have to do, so there's a really good definition of what makes a good VC, and it's a good buyer and a good seller. And in terms of being a good buyer, it's spotting the right deals at the right price, doing the right DD that then informs the future strategy, adds portfolio value, maximizes your exit, and literally, you know, to use an old adage, you know, buy low, sell high. So you could just be really good at structuring. However, the expertise does, you know, it is required, because if you're looking at, say, 10 space tech deals and you are a generalist fund, how are you going to know which technologies are, you know, the prevailing ones? How are you going to spot the opportunities? And more importantly, how are you going to secure the deal flow? Because you want to be the person that they come to. And a lot of VC and even private equity is all about the sourcing. It's not necessarily the skill of the investor or the entrepreneur. It's right place, right time. And did they come to you? And you see this with a lot of the, you know, decacorns in Silicon Valley. The overlap in terms of VCs who pick the same ones is something like 2%. So they're saying it's not about your skill as an investor. It's about being the go-to person in that sector. And then being able to look across the 10 and say, I'm going to back these two horses because I know the market very well.
Okay. So keeping on that technology vein, with kind of technology at the moment being incredibly diverse industry, you know, technically you could argue it's not its own industry, it supplies into industries, but to keep on that kind of title, and obviously being incredibly disruptive, what are the areas within the technology, you know, ecostructure that you are most excited about?
Yeah, I think there's lots of exciting subsegments, should we say, and a lot of people will say, well, AI and machine learning and all these things, and that's obviously exciting in terms of what it can do, and in terms of, you know, there's a lot of people worried about their jobs and will machines take over. Hopefully, machines take over the laborious jobs that humans perhaps shouldn't have been doing in the first place. So I'm quite excited about that. And obviously, you need to balance that with, is there going to be universal basic income, or, you know, as long as everyone is looked after and it doesn't all get slurped up into the tech firms. But in terms of a real opportunity, they talk, you know, I was at a BVCA webinar last week, and they were talking about the biggest commercial opportunity of our time, and that is climate tech. And, you know, climate tech is a massive sector. And obviously, that's the commercial side. You know, people need to eat, they need to have businesses. So we do need to be cognizant of that. You know, you can't just be hugging trees for the sake of it. However, you know, there is this really, you know, this imperative that our very existence is being threatened. And what better sector to invest into? What better business to run? Because even if you're not successful in your endeavors, at least you left the planet in a better place than when you started. And, you know, if you just think about all these drop shipping models that have come out, you know, you could go and get some stuff manufactured in the East, sell it on drop shipping, make a bunch of money, but it's probably one-off products, things people don't need, and you're just ruining the planet. And people need to get out of that and say, actually, you know, good for the planet, good business. And not only that's again, even if you were not that morally aware, the amount of money flowing into climate tech is absolutely colossal. And if you look at the number one issue in boardrooms, right from, you know, look at if FTSE 250 upwards and even below, it's all about the planet, people's perceptions of how you're treating the planet. And that's going to affect whether consumers are actually buying their products and whether they're going to be successful. So, you know, in order to be a sustainable firm, you have to look after the planet. So, you know, if you're thinking about starting a business, that's where you should go in. And as I say, it could be a you know, upcycling retail business. It could be something in space tech that helps get the debris out of space. You know, the sector is just phenomenally large. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. And I think what better time to be alive and to be in this industry where you can actually preserve your child's future with the whole planet's future.
It fits very well into a lot of, look at what's going on with regards to the ESG push, certainly within Europe and certainly now in the US as well, where, it's law here now from a private equity and venture perspective. And obviously the significant awareness that we seem to have around what we're actually doing to this planet. So, I think that's an interesting, certainly an interesting space. So I did a bit of digging, as I do with all guests that come on the podcast, Alex, and managed to find your blog, The Tippy Top. So firstly, what's the story behind the name? And secondly, what led you to start, this blog and website? And tell us a bit about it, please.
Oh, thanks very much. So obviously, start off with the name. It's my friend and I had this running joke. We just said we're going to the tippy top. We didn't know exactly where that is, but it's just the best of the best. We're going to do fun things, be successful. So it's just all about that. How I help bring people on the journey and help them get to their tippy top. And in terms of going back to the origins of why I started it, so I think, coming out of school, I thought, okay, I did okay at school. And I thought, I don't really know how the world works. I don't really know how business works. And I didn't necessarily do the economics module or whatever it was at school. But I thought, these are skills I should have. I should know how to invest. I should know how personal finance works. And I didn't really know. And you can read a few books and it helps. So anyway, I thought, okay, go to university, I'll figure it out there. Went to university, 4 years, did engineering again, not a Bachelor of Commerce or anything like that. But still, these are skills that everyone should have. And came out of the degree thinking, well, I know a lot about engines and maths and things, but I still don't really know how the world works. I don't know much about finance and investing. So let me go and learn that. So eventually, kept reading books, kept reading blogs. They weren't as big back then. But then I thought, okay, well, let me do this business school thing. Did that, had a couple of really, excellent lecturers, had an opportunity to come over and study in London. Said, okay, now I need to actually get my finance knowledge even better. I wrote level one of the CFA examination. I did a lot of finance courses. I mentored a lot of businesses. I had started a few businesses of my own back then, really learned everything and had a lot of lucky breaks. And, I felt very privileged for all the opportunities I had. And then after all that, I thought, wow, I think I kind of understand how it works now. And I thought, well, there was an incredibly difficult journey. And I had a lot of lucky breaks. And I thought, if that was that difficult for me, what chance does everyone else have? And where are the repositories of information to tell people all these things I know? And ranging from how to, do a salary negotiation, how to go through an interview, how to start a business, how to invest, how to be a VC, right down to the very basics of the skills we require to be successful and not be a slave to the system in terms of being burdened by debt. So I created the blog to say, this is me paying it forward, giving back, empowering everyone, and really helping the small person who doesn't have the access to these resources that I've had. And I've already seen, helped countless people throughout my career, people I've worked with just saying, hey, every month, why don't you invest in these index trackers? And instead of paying for these expensive funeral policies or whatever they do. And they're like, wow, thanks, Alex, you made me rich. Yet they've made themselves rich. So it's just that small little bits of advice. And obviously now there's a lot more advice out there. You've got TikTok, you've got a lot more YouTubers, there's many more blogs, but it's also about making the content relatable to say, okay, this person is real, I can understand them, and it's not all locked up in classrooms in MBA schools. Obviously, again, you've got Coursera, information is far more accessible, but again, it feels that it's only the select few that can access it. So it's making it tangible and real and saying, I'm like you, I've gone on this long journey, been lucky, how can I help you?
Very, very interesting. Very commendable to take such a step to help people. I agree. It's complete. It's very. Previously, we're in a world where we lacked information, and now we're in a world where we have too much of it and questioning the value, certainly. And obviously the thing you've mentioned there about index funds is something I've considerably looked into and I now invest in. Instead of trying to pick my own stocks, I rely on a couple of funds that that do it all for me. Much smarter, much more intelligent, and people are much more aware of what's going on than me. Actually recording this, and Tesla went up 13% yesterday, and I was like, and then I thought, well, yeah, but I'm that kind of guy where I dabble in crypto, but I'm not fully in crypto. So I'd probably be a private equity investor if I was to be on your scale of where someone would be, maybe growth stage private equity, something a bit more interesting. Certainly than large cap, I'd probably be at the very kind of early, you know, small to mid cap would probably interest me the most. A little bit of risk, but not too risk. But I think that's brilliant. Yeah, helping people and getting an opportunity for individuals to find out more and learn. And it is difficult to certainly find that that information in a very very busy world. So, bringing it to top performers and putting more around the talent side, obviously my favorite subject. What three attributes do you believe make and form a top performer?
Great. Like in terms of VCPE candidates?
Let's ask this actually with regards to the portfolio side of things. You know, as an executive, you're obviously very well networked, very, very versed in people in venture, but also just entrepreneurs in general. What do you believe makes that kind of top entrepreneur, top venture type portfolio executive?
Yeah. And sticking on the portfolio executive, looking after the portfolio specifically. So I think it's, something that's hugely underrated is authenticity. Because you don't want to disconnect between the CEO slash entrepreneur and yourself. You need to build up that trust. And that comes back to sourcing the deal at the outset. They want to have prior knowledge of you. They want to be able to feel like this person really understands me and wants the best for me and the business. And obviously, you need to be commercial. And sometimes there will be some hard judgment calls. They better say it's about having that connection. And then also, it's about, you know, as in terms of skills, being able to add value and actively looking to add value. And that's something that we, you know, constantly look at. We look at how much value have we added? Where have we added value? And we really look to do that in each and every investee company. So going out of your way, going above and beyond, well, you're not actually because you're adding value to your own portfolio, but what introductions can you make? What advice can you give? You know, what, you know, business analysis can you provide to the entrepreneur? You know, when you do your analysis, do you just keep it behind closed doors or do you share it and say, this is what I've learned about your business. This is how I think we can add value, you know, pull the lever, increase profitability or whatever it may be. And then another top skill is being there for your CEOs and entrepreneurs, being at the end of the phone when they need you and positioning yourself as that trusted person that they can speak to and be open and honest with. And why do I say that? Well, more so than ever, you're seeing mental health is absolutely a huge issue. If you look across most portfolio companies, the number one reason for sickness is mental health. Now, whether that's burnout, just general stress and strain, you know, just people feeling overwhelmed and not knowing what to do, they need to have people that they can rely on and speak to. So there is certainly a moral imperative to look after their mental health, and particularly when targets are not being met. And you might be under pressure to deliver for your fund, to deliver for your LPs, but if you put too much pressure on that CEO and they crack, all value is lost. So actively nurturing the, you know, the people you work with and helping them. It's all about helping and alignment and reaching that common goal.
Interesting. And what do you, well, I'll bring this both into venture or private equity answer on either, to be fair, but what do you love about the private equity industry or venture capital? And equally, what do you dislike about it?
Yeah, great. One other thing I would say on the skill in terms of PEVC, it's about deal sourcing. So about getting out there and, as I say, actively adding value, whichever kind of channel you choose to do that at events, on social, whatever it is, add value first, and then the entrepreneurs and good deals will come to you. And it could be adding value to corporate finance houses. But number one skill is sourcing. And that's, you know, with all the, you know, the crowded market in terms of all the cash floating around, entrepreneurs and CEOs have options. They don't need your money. So there's got to be a real reason why they're coming to you. Go back to your original question, Alex, in terms of PEVC. Was it around what's really interesting?
What do you love about private equity and venture capital? What do you dislike about it?
So I think the most interesting bit is that you're in it's a very privileged position to be in terms of the experience that you can gain. It's, you know, it was one of those, you know, cliches, no 2 days are the same. I mean, that's the understatement of the century. It is so fast paced. The learning curve is so steep and never ending. So even after 30 years, you'll see things that, you know, and then this is what, you know, a lot of my seniors tell me. They say, I learned something new today. I never thought that that was possible. And there's not many careers that you can do that in. So it's not the same job over and over, rinse and repeat. The other thing linked to that is that's not for everyone. And so whilst it's very exciting, it's hugely taxing. It's not 9 to 5. And not only are the work demands intense, the demands on your emotions are considerable. As I say, you're working with people. And a lot of people say investing in startups and private equity would be very easy if you didn't have to work with people. And you just think about the index trackers versus venture capital. They are opposite ends of the spectrum. So you need to be a person with a high degree of emotional maturity, and more importantly, emotional resilience, and really enjoy that fast-paced environment. And as I say, that's not something that's advertised. The VC PE industry is always advertised as being sexy, and there are elements to like about it. But if that's not, you know, doesn't suit your personality or your lifestyle, you will not enjoy it. So, yeah, really interesting.
Absolutely. And where do you, obviously, clearly, you got your own blog, and I encourage people to go to that. But where do you find your influences? What do you read? What do you watch? What do you listen? Where do you follow?
Yeah, so I think I read a lot of books. When I say read books, I say listen to books. I prefer audio rather than reading. And, you know, looking at influences and people who have really done it and really step changed the industry. So you're looking at like Peter Thiel, looking at, you know, 0 to 1. How do you really find those knockout deals? How does the venture model really work? Those things that step change your thinking. Do a lot of, you know, podcasting, listening to everything from sales right the way through to structuring deals, because you do need the full skill set. On my blog, you'll see a list of podcasts, books, social media channels, a whole bunch of stuff that you can subscribe to. There's loads there, and yeah, hopefully you get a lot of value from that.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of things out there to find information on. I think it's interesting as well how you position. I think a lot of people put too much heavy weight on private equity being a lot of financial analysis, but it's nice to hear somebody positioning a lot right. I very rarely hear anybody say anything about sales within either private equity or venture, but it's such an important part with regards to deal origination and positioning your firm, especially the level that we work in with the kind of small and mid-cap and private equity. And we don't work with the brand names in venture either. So that ability to be able to, you know, encourage individuals and position why the benefit is of working with your firm as opposed to going with a Carlyle Group or a Tomico and receiving investment from the smaller firms in Europe, North America. So I think there's a lot that can certainly be taken from there. And I think there's a lot of investors that maybe miss out on deals and opportunities that they put down to, we couldn't get there with the numbers, or the investment committee was X, Y, and Z, we couldn't close that deal. I think, you know, there's potentially a lot of opportunity to learn in sales and drive commercial acumen, as well as other, what I regard as softer skills that maybe aren't seen in the PE and VC world. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, like it feels like the market's become very, very competitive, and they talk about huge. Yeah, more less spaces in private equity than in NFL football. You know, it's highly competitive, and you need, as a candidate, you need a way to differentiate yourself to get into the firm. And then once you're in the firm, you're going to start winning business for the firm. So it all kind of works together. And the power also is you know, with the number of firms out there, I feel like we're going to a slightly more decentralized model where, as opposed to just being, here's a brand and you get money from us, because everyone's got money, it's more about the individuals. Who am I going to be working with? And what you want is, you want, you know, entrepreneurs to become, I want to work with you. And which firm do you work at? Ah, okay, I'll come and get money from there, because the money is inconsequential. And it's, you know, there's a lot of people that have very prestigious profiles and CVs and things like that, but it's not accessible to the entrepreneurs. And those people don't have the time to spend with the entrepreneurs. So I would really encourage everyone to download their information from their head, help the companies. They do need the help. The disconnect between entrepreneurs and private equity is, you know, it's just criminal. And people know what to do, and there's not time for the entrepreneurs to make the mistakes. There aren't really good schools for entrepreneurs to go to, and the information is all there, but it's so difficult to access. So really get out there. You will add a considerable amount of value.
Absolutely. So, Alex, if anybody wants to reach out to you post this, listening to this discussion, how best would they get in touch?
So just on social, at the Tippy Top blog, on my website, www.thetippytop.com, and find me on LinkedIn, Alexander Lee.
Perfect. We'll put both links in the show notes if anybody wants to certainly find that out or check out anything from there. So, Alex, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate your insight. Leave us with lots of value here for both private equity and venture, and also portfolio executives, and a bit in there, I think, for entrepreneurs and people just looking to get into the industry. So really good stuff. So thank you very much for sharing all of that.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
And as always, to all of our listeners, thank you very much. Every month we increase in subscribers and downloads, and we break records. So I'm not going to go on about it because I'll be speaking about it every time. But thank you very much for listening. Should you ever need support with either private equity professionals or portfolio executive, please do reach out to me, Raw Selection. But till the next time, keep smashing it. And thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Private Equity Podcast on www.raw-selection.com.